We spoke to Rufus Pollock from the FFII.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Rufus, just go away.
This is a fucking train wreck. Okay.
Season 2, episode 11.
Again.
Fucked up again.
Episode 11.
Season 2, episode 11.
Ah. Whoa. Welcome, listeners.
Yeah.
Yes, from hello.
Welcome one and all from across the world
to Wolverhampton.
So what are we going to talk about this time?
Let's talk about everything.
Let's talk
everything. Everything ever about open source and Linux.
Yep, we can talk about all Linux. Those things in 67 minutes so it fits on a CD.
74, right. I keep telling you.
We're going to talk to Aaron
Segal
from the Kudeta product.
Kudeta.
He did write Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's the cow desktop environment.
Yep.
Yeah.
Does anyone actually know what the K stands for?
It's utterly cool. Brilliant.
It's just...
Sounds for cool.
It's just... The K desktop environment.
It's CAC, cool. I think it stands cool.
So, Aaron Sago will be debating that later. We'll also talk to Rufus Pollock from the FFII.
Chris Waddle.
And Chris Waddle. about European software patents.
Yep. We love the patents.
Yeah, man. Patent my ass.
No one should ever patent your ass.
Patent leather
shoes. Yours? Bloody hell.
You should write to your MP and say, I was going to say MP3. You should write... You should write to the MP and say, you
I'm
know,
in for a log.
Software patents patents restrict the ability of innovation in patenting my ass. You know, because you know you should have the opportunity to patent Matt Ravel's little gnome ass.
I do,
and everything that it produces
is sweet and plump and round, brown underground.
Isn't there prior art?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Anyway, so let's recap.
I'm gonna have a protest on my website. Stop patents from Matt's ass.
Stop Matt's ass.
Right, now, what we're going to talk about on the show for all those sensible listeners who have joined us from...
We've just said.
Software patents.
Software patents.
Aaron Segal.
Aaron Segal. And we're going to have a discussion about software development paradigms, which isn't as boring as it sounds.
It is actually quite interesting.
We're not going to be talking about Python again, are we?
I think we should.
You love the Python.
Good.
Why don't you talk about marketers instead?
Python. I'm really interested in talking about Python.
Shed your skin and get on with it.
What else? Is there anything?
Yeah, what?
We'll have to talk about that particular special day. That particular special day that's going to happen on Saturday, the 25th of June, 2005, in Wolverhampton.
Joseph Engel's birthday?
No.
Is it actually?
And it's not Glastonbury either.
It's Dublin Gay Pride March is what it is on the 25th of June.
Is it
fascinating?
Really?
Not nearly as fascinating, though, as...
Love Radio
Live! Radio Live.
2005, Wolverhampton Molyneux Stadium.
This is the intro, isn't it?
Yes, sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, so anyway, guys, have a good show. Enjoy it.
And send us your email to show@johnobacon.org. show@lugradio.org.
Joe, no software patents, bacon.
That's right. Let's get this show on the road.
Let's go.
Things have been happening lately in the whole European software patents arena.
European.
Or as the Americans say, Europe. So apologies to our the Americans think it's a moon around Jupiter, this continent. Anyway, Europa.
I never touched her.
Anyway,
waka waka waka.
Software patents, we love those, don't we?
European, we do. Nice. European, no, that's the
thing. No, we don't love them, right.
European on my face.
It's secret. Anyway, we spoke to Rufus Pollock from the FFII.
It was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Rufus, take it away.
This is a fucking train wreck.
Okay. Carry on, Matt. I've not just knocked a glass off the floor.
Are we
on the floor?
On the floor. Are we in zero gravity?
We are. We're on Europa, around Jupiter. We spoke to Rufus Pollock from FFII about the software patents issue. So we apologise to any non-European listeners, but you're going to have to sit through a load of European shit. Hi Rufus, it's Matthew from Lug Radio.
Hi,
how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
We just wanted to have a chat with you this evening because obviously there's a lot of developments at the moment with regard to European software patents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
not all of our listeners, and certainly not all of us, have a full grasp of the issues at hand. Yeah. So I was wondering if you could give us a brief update on what's going on and why we should be interested in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, I mean, I don't know, one of the things that happened obviously very recently was on Monday, yesterday. Finally, there was the second meeting of the Council of Ministers, which they basically have to sign off on their version of the draft of the directive, the Software Patents Directive. And they did, there'd been a real hope that perhaps they would reconsider their position, which they formed last May, over, you know, almost a year ago, which was very bad, essentially from the point of view of FFRI and people who are concerned about software patents, was very bad.
Right.
Because they took no consideration of the views put forward by the European Parliament, and so basically just reiterated the Commission text, which was which is the one everyone's concerned about. And there'd been a real hope that they take account of the of concerns. Also, changes since last May, that like Poland had come into the EU and the voting weights had changed, and a lot of shenanigans had gone on last May that seemed quite dubious, to be honest.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
So, for example, one of the things that happened was the Netherlands actually censured, as it were, to some their own representative at the Council of Ministers. You know, the Parliament actually said, you know, what were you doing? Kind of, why did you vote the way that you did?
Right.
Yeah. Because, for example, without the Netherlands voting the way they did last May, kind of essentially abstaining or, I think, even voting slightly for it, there wouldn't have been a qualified majority.
Bear with me. You'll have to help me out here a bit. Because I understand the issue, but not the machinations of the European Parliament and so on.
Absolutely.
So do you think you could go into a bit more detail about what the Parliament is, what the Council of Ministers are, and so on?
Absolutely, yeah. No, this is the thing. I can remember coming to this issue. It really puts one off a bit, unfortunately. Perhaps not accidentally, one might say. I don't know. Given that basically there are three people with power in the European level. There's the Commission, which is entirely unelected, right? It's just a bureaucracy.
Right. Okay.
You then have the Council of Ministers, which again is not elected, but it's the representative. Basically, each country has a kind of seat on that committee. So it's the representative of the national government at the European level.
Yeah.
And then you have the European Parliament, which is made up of the MEPs that we do elect.
Failed MPs.
Failed MPs, according to AIDS. Do you think that's right, Rufus?
I think that's I mean, obviously it's not as prestigious. I mean, I don't know. It really varies from country to country. I mean, right now, MEPs, as it were, are invaluable allies in this. So
right.
There are, to some extent, there are only hope.
They don't seem to be enormously allied to the free software cause, from what I've seen of them and what people have received back from their MEPs when they've written to them.
Absolutely. I mean, the problem you've got, sad thing is it's both MEPs. I mean, you want to really, I mean, in terms of who you want to talk to, it's both your MEPs and your MPs. Because obviously the most fundamental thing would be to try and change the Council of Ministers. So try and get Lord Sainsbury in England, basically, who's the
king of the supermarkets.
Yep, Mr. Supermarkets. trying to persuade, get Lord Sainsbury basically to change his position.
Right.
Because he's the guy who controls what the UK does on this kind of thing in the Council of Ministers, right? So that's pretty crucial. And obviously, what's really fundamental now is we're into second reading. So what's happened, I was saying, just coming from these three groups, and basically, the Commission, the only people allowed to propose legislation are the Commission, but they don't get to approve anything, they just get to propose it.
Right.
That's very powerful. Rufus, as you can imagine.
Just out of curiosity, we haven't got too much time today, unfortunately, but one thing that I think a lot of Lug Radio listeners are going to want to know about is, what can we do about it? What can we do that's going to actually make a difference on the software patent issue? I mean, a lot of people have written to their MPs, people have protested on their website, all this kind of stuff. Is there anything that we can all do that you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, the most crucial thing right now is that you've really got to get through to UK MEPs, and I mean, sad to say, the UK is, as it were, the worst case of MEPs, basically, in the European Union.
Right. Okay.
They're the least on side, least understanding of this issue, seemingly. Let's just take Liberal Democrats. You might think we're like one of the best hopes. You know, to some extent.
I think so with Richard Allen.
Richard Allen is absolutely great on this issue. He has a really good understanding.
Yeah.
But the MEPs, they're often very nice and very well-intentioned people. You got to understand what happens is they basically don't have they often don't know a lot about the issue.
I think that's the problem.
Personally, they don't have never written software or had particular contact with it, right? Other than perhaps using Windows every so often,
So,
they just go to their advisor, basically. And in the case of Liberal Democrats, happens to be an ex-patent attorney, is my understanding.
Bastards. So, the thing is, then, I mean, the problem that we face is the only option we've really got is to write to our MEPs. But open sourcey type people tend to have a zealotry faction.
You're asking me what. I mean, the other thing I can say is one of the things, right, is although open source people are, you know, as you say, everyone's zealous, they often have contact with, they work at companies or whatever they may do. And one of the biggest things here, I think, one of the things that I would say that the other side tend to do in this is they want to portray those who oppose software patents as kind of basically crazy. So that's their tactic.
Mm.
So it's absolutely essential to make clear this is about innovation. This is about, you know, the ability to write good software and, you know, for the economy. I mean, it's very clearly also about freedom in these things.
Sure.
But one of the most powerful things you've got to get through to MEPs is that, you know, this is about the real economy. It isn't just about, oh, well, it would be quite nice if, you know, these hobbyists could do something. I mean, that's really not what it is, but that's the way it gets portrayed.
Okay.
So one of the biggest things is if you know companies who are actually writing software, commercial companies, persuade them to talk to their MEP. Persuade them to write or even ring up their MEP. Make sure they understand why it will affect them. Because I think that's one of the biggest issues we see, is that there are vast numbers of small and medium-sized companies out there who this will affect in a big way, but don't. Yeah, it's never really gone on their radar screen.
Right, okay. If I could ask about something entirely different.
Absolutely.
You're also the point man for the UK Campaign for Digital Rights' campaign to make the...
Digital rights?
Yeah. Sorry, I got tied up with the word campaign there a little. To convince the BBC to open the Creative Archive.
Yeah.
Is it going to happen?
Yes, it is. But if you see what happened, so I don't know if you saw recently, was that the government kind of issued its report, its views on, you know, the BBC's. BBC puts forward its pitch for what it wants to do, and then the government, you know, mull over, and everyone else has a, you know, puts in their two pennies worth. And, you know, the big issue is the BBC is under a lot of pressure about, like, not harming commercial people and so on and so forth. So one of the big things that happens is there's a lot of sensitivity that they've got to, like, show, oh, this is going to be good for the commercial sector, it's not going to harm them in any way, and so on and so forth. And so, again, one of the biggest things you can do is just, you know, put this on people's radar. If you care about the Creative Archive, you've got to, like, you've got to make the government... to some degree understand that.
Okay. I mean, as far as I can tell, what happened is the BBC said, we're going to give away all this stuff which is just mouldering in the basement, and everyone went, that's a brilliant idea, and then all the politicians just pissed on it. So...
Bastards.
I don't think it's quite... I mean, for example, one of the big problems with the stuff in the Creative Archive, okay, I'll put it very simply, right? Every single piece of archive footage generally has rights in it that the BBC does not own.
Even right, okay.
It has people singing, it has someone narrating... It's unbelievable the amount of rights you have to clear in this stuff. I mean, it's one of the reasons for, like, Creative Commons type stuff.
Right, so it's not just as simple as the BBC want to give it away, the government don't want to let.
It isn't as simple as that, no. Sad to say, you know, I mean, you know, at the same time, the more you can do to make a noise about these kind of things, the more it does have an effect, and it does have a very beneficial effect. And there is huge amounts of material, which is just basically mouldering in archives. And with a bit more political will, be it from... you know, the government or other people just feeling they can go ahead, we could, you know, there could be an embarrassment of riches, whereas at the moment there's just an embarrassment.
Rufus, I'm afraid we're going to have to wind things up, but can you just tell our listeners where they can find out more information about FF II, and also and also the software patents issue, and where they can find out more about the UK CDR.
Yeah, it's, in fact, the creative... Okay, well, I'll start reverse order. The Creative Archive thing is actually run by Friends of the Creative Domain. It's not run any... You know, CDR take part in that. And there's a website for that, which I'm just about to narrate to you, which is... So it's http://www.okfn.org/FCD.
/. Right. /TV, did you say, sorry?
CD. CD. Friends of the Creative Domain. So it's FCD. Right. And the software patent is ffii.org.uk.
Yeah.
Which I think most of you know. There's a mailing list I really recommend people sign up to, which you can find linked from the front page there. And, you know, the biggest thing I can say is also, is that, you know, people have written to MEPs. All I can say is, to some extent, redouble your efforts, try and actually contact them, and get actual companies that, if you know, involved, and say, look, this matters to us. That is the thing that will really make them listen.
Yeah,
and brilliant. Make them understand why this issue matters.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Rufus, for your time. Let's hope we can do something about all this.
Thanks, Rufus. Cheers, Rufus.
Cheers, bye.
Take care. Bye.
Hi, this is David Mainley calling from the Gnome Release Party in Perth, Western Australia. Say hi, everyone.
Hi. Give us a bell on the Lug Radio voicemail on 0870 931 1730. If you're international, call on +44 870 931 1730. Try and keep it under about 30 seconds and it might just get on.
Over the last few weeks, we've spoken to representatives from the Java community. That was Svendborgi last time. And we spoke to Miguel Iguana about Mono the previous time.
Yep.
And I've spoken about Python in, I think, every episode since the first
every
episode.
Every single episode, for God's sake.
And part of this was as a response to something Havoc Pennington brought up about where the GNOME team should be going with development, which was, at the moment, the core of GNOME and a lot
Is
of the...
Is his name Havoc?
Yeah, his third middle name is Havoc or something.
What a cool name.
He's actually Robert something something.
His first
Havoc
name's like Bimbolini or something.
Our middle name's Havoc, don't you know?
Yes.
I don't think he's ever said that.
I'm sure he has.
Anyway, what are we doing? My name's
Havoc, don't you know?
I don't know if you'd have the don't you know, but you know.
You know.
One of the things he brought up is that the core of GNOME and a lot of the close into the core but outlying programs in GNOME are written in C.
Aye.
And...
Proper programming language.
Is it worth thinking about moving from C to a higher level language which will enable people to develop with greater speed, with greater accuracy, with less effort and fewer bugs?
No, that'd be a stupid idea. It's going to be really slow.
Some of the candidates mentioned were Python, were Java, were C Sharp and Mono languages.
My God.
So...
What about QBasic? That'd be good.
What are you doing,
Tickle? QBasic is proprietary and hasn't been ported to Linux.
Pascal, let's do it in that.
So? That shouldn't stop us. We should still write GNOME in QBasic.
You are welcome to make that case to the GNOME Foundation. You're on your own. You made it.
What about Jetson Basic from the Amstrad PCW?
So, what do you think?
The point here is that's the discussion that was had.
Should we write it in a higher level language?
Yeah, your immediate response there was no, we shouldn't. It'd be slow.
Yeah.
Which I think is the horses argument that a lot of C people have against it.
It's horses for courses, isn't it?
Is it slow though? Let's.
Well, it's a high level language, so by definition, it's almost slow.
C's a high level language if you're an assembly programmer.
It depends what you're doing it for. I mean, for instance,
which is faster?
I use is it a thing called BlogGTK, post my weblog.
Right.
Now that's written in Python. I didn't actually know it was written
until
quite recently.
Okay.
But
that's not something that needs performance though, really, is it?
No, but how much of the GNOME API, how much of GNOME does need performance?
Part of the desktop, surely it needs to perform quite well.
So
if it's just something for posting to your blog, then performance isn't really an issue, is it?
So what we're basically saying...
It's not GNOME crunching, is it?
But this is the fact, isn't it? I mean, all of the kind of applications that run on top of GNOME, I think should be written... you should have the opportunity of writing them in higher level languages. But the actual fundamental GNOME libraries and all that kind of stuff, I think should be written in C, because you want performance
with Python bindings.
And I think GTK should be written in C as well. Hey?
Could you write Beagle in a high level language?
Beagle is written in a high level language, written in C#.
Do you class C-sharp as a high-level language?
Yeah.
Higher than C++?
Yeah, it runs atop the .NET framework.
C and C++ runs atop the Mono framework. Yeah. I mean, what we're talking about is scripting interpreted languages, not high-level languages.
Yeah, no, Matt's right there. We're talking about essentially scripting languages.
Yes. That's unreasonable.
Why?
Because scripting languages sounds pejorative to me. It sounds like they're not suitable for real tasks, and that's exactly the thing we're trying to discuss.
No, you know what we're talking about. We're talking about interpreted
or bytecode languages, what we're talking about, rather than proper native applications.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we've seen, we've spoken to some people about Mono, we've spoken to some people about Java, I've spoken about Python, and I think...
Are there any others that we haven't...
Those are the three major non-C candidates. The other thing that's outstanding is that there are a few portability libraries and useful libraries that could be used for GNOME in C. If you take, say, Uno, which is developed by the OpenOffice project, and it provides a lot of portability stuff, and it provides a lot of things like useful types for strings and all that kind of thing. But they're not using that, because if you incorporate that into the core, people say things like, well, maybe this time next year we'll be using Python, so it seems silly to move to that.
But the question
is... So the point is that they're not making the most of using C as a development language in case they... So they've got the option of moving to something else, but they're not actually moving to anything else. So what you're doing is working with a less performant C than you could do. Because they don't want to optimize the C in case they move somewhere else. They don't want to move somewhere else in case they want to optimize the C.
I grant your point on the second part, not using the libraries, not really using it to its fullest extent.
Yeah.
But the question is how important is performance? Because a lot of people say that you should use a lower level language such as C. And for the purpose of this discussion, I think we're all essentially referring to C as the lower level language. I don't think we're talking about writing it in machine code or assembler.
No one talks about
it. For how many milliseconds did you think about writing iRiver in assembler?
No milliseconds.
This is my question, though. What's better? A slightly slower performance than a Python, or no performance at all because somebody couldn't write it?
Well, this is exactly the point I was just about to make.
That's a good argument,
is that performance is usually the reason, but I suspect that if we could make software better available in higher level languages, we'd get a lot more hackers on board. But the flip side of that is that, and this is going to, this is... I don't know whether this is my opinion or not.
Don't but you know your own
opinion? I suspect that a lot of higher level programmers aren't necessarily as good programmers as lower level programmers.
Almost certainly.
By definition, really.
I would agree with you.
But I don't know, because it's such a fleeting statistic.
You're talking about making the core and the core development team quite elitist. Now, there's a reasonable argument for making the core development team elitist, because if you let anybody hack on the core, then it'll be bollocks.
But what I'm saying is that imagine that we had GNOME or KDE written in Python, for argument's sake. Okay, the whole thing written in Python. There's an argument that would say that the two projects would develop at a far greater speed because it would lower the bar in terms of complexity of contributing to
it. Desktop wouldn't work at as high a speed.
It wouldn't work as high a speed, but then the argument for that side of thing would be, well, the speed of which technology is coming on, is that all right?
That's the Microsoft argument.
Exactly, that's the problem.
It's not a totally fucking unreasonable argument, though.
It is.
If the stuff you're writing is too slow, just sit tight for 18 months and wait for Moore's Law to catch up with you.
I don't want to sound harsh.
Flabby.
But I'd like to bring up a real-world example from our own lives. Recently, we relaunched the website with some fantastic work from you, Al.
I can see where this is going.
I'm about to get a shoe in about it.
But in the first I'm with you on day, this one, Matt. Until I suggested caching, it ran a little slowly, let's be honest, and it was written in Python. We don't want that happening on the desktop. Am I just looking at this all
scanned?
We
saw tremendous performance hits there, didn't we?
No, I agree with you. I think... that some of that was down to the way I did it. And that's the point. I could have decided to run it under ModPython, for example, and I didn't. The website was running as pure CGI, and it was too slow. Quite agree with that. I put my hand up to that. And I would expect that the cool, intelligent, deeply committed hackers Jono's talking about, the elitists, would be there optimizing the Python that people write, for example, or the Mono that people, or optimizing the Mono runtimes to make them work faster.
You'd still have the moderation process going there. They're not allowing shit code in, I suppose.
Exactly. I
mean, so in many ways, the
whole argument for open source software is that it makes it, we've got a much better development model because a million people can contribute to
it. Yeah.
But in practice, a million people can't contribute to it because about 9 guys in the world understand how the core of GNOME works. In exactly the same way that both Mozilla and OpenOffice, two major open source projects,
dumbing down,
have had a serious problem getting new guys on board because if you look at the OpenOffice code, it's this fucking massive wall, and no one can even get started. So, and Mozilla was exactly the same. You can't just pick up Mozilla, get the code, make a little change, recompile it, and then you've got a new browser with your little change. You've got to understand whole thing beforehand.
I really think it's horses for courses. I mean, the NoMire ever thing, yeah, of course you're going to choose a high-level language because it's quick. You can develop really quickly, done what you need to get done. Brilliant. But for other stuff, you need, it's horses for courses.
Yeah.
You wouldn't write the kernel in Python, would you?
But the...
No, I wouldn't.
But the thing is, I mean, this is the point where...
What would you compile it with?
but this is where it's interesting.
GCC
is,
written in Python.
Is that, you know, if there's a perceived benefit in using a higher level language because it lowers the bar in terms of people being able to contribute to that project, would it really happen? Because you're still going to have the people who are faithful to that project moderating code. Yeah. And there's still going to be a massive chunk of code that you've... Maybe not as big as if it were written in C and C++, but you're still going to have a massive chunk of code to get your head around. Yeah. I suppose the benefit of it is that it opens up the third-party aspect to writing software for that environment. Mm-hmm. But then again, we've got that at the moment.
You'd have to do a lot more code maintenance, though, if you started getting submissions from people from higher-level languages, because by definition, they're not as good at programmers, so therefore you need to do more code maintenance.
I think that's an unbelievable assertion.
Here's a
question.
People
who code in high-level language are, by definition, not as good as C people. That's the most C-snob thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Fuck right off.
ACK writes some very interesting, good stuff in Python, right? Great.
And our website.
But what could you usefully contribute, to the GNOME desktop that was an integral part of the desktop and not just... Although a great application NoMire River is, not just like a nice little thing that sits on something. What could you genuinely contribute that could be written in Python?
This is an interesting point, because I think the view we seem to be coming around to is that the core should stay low level, but we should make sure there are bindings for everything.
Exactly.
Yes. So if you want to write things that are reasonably close to the core in a mono-supported language like C#, or in Python, or in Ruby, or whatever, or in Java, with Java GNOME, then you can do that. And the sorts of things I would write, for instance, a few other things I'd like to write plug into Nautilus. I'd love to write subversion interface that runs in Nautilus, like Tortoise SVN in Windows.
That does seem
because that'd
be
really, really handy. And I can do that with the Nautilus Python binding.
Right, right.
Just as soon as I upgrade to Ubuntu, hurry.
When's that going to happen, oh red-bearded friend?
The day it comes out in April. But that's the point. I mean, I think
there are,
to some extent, binding things. I mean, I think where the GNOME, I don't know about KDE here, but where the GNOME project fall down in terms of the bindings is not making them available, it's documenting the bastards and providing examples.
GNOME Python is thoroughly undocumented.
Amazingly undocumented.
There is nothing on the internet. The only way I found out how to use it was on IRC.
Yeah,
I found one bloke in Hash GNOME who'd used it.
Yeah, you read the examples and you can hack things together. But I mean, the C bindings and the C# bindings are not a lot better. You know, talk to that. but that's the point. I mean, the C# bindings are a lot better. The point is that all the people writing real serious proper C# applications at the moment are all GNOME hackers. They already know about it.
There we go then.
You know, I mean, they're doing it off the top of their heads.
So here at Lug Radio Towers, we give GNOME some good loving, really, don't we? We love the GNOME.
We don't like Matt that much. We do love GNOME.
So it's about time we actually balance that out and talk to someone from KDE.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, who's on the phone?
Aaron Sager.
Hello?
Hi, Aaron. It's Lug Radio calling.
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
You all right?
Oh, not bad. Not bad. It's another, actually, uncharacteristically sunny day.
Fantastic. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
Pardon me?
Whereabouts are you living at the moment?
Calgary, Canada.
Fantastic.
Which is just on the eastern side of the Rocky Mountains.
So what time is it over there?
It's 1:45 at the moment.
Fantastic.
13:45.
1:45 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's where the 13 came in.
Yeah. Right, to kick off then, Aaron, what are you doing for the KDE project at the moment?
Right now? I do various things. I'm the maintainer of Kicker and a couple of other little applications in the code base. I'm also fairly involved with the usability project, the new interface guidelines that we're drafting up, and basic all-around bug switcher and kind of contribute it where I can.
Right, fantastic. And, I mean, obviously part of the reason why you're on the show is to talk about largely KDE usability. A lot of people in the Lug Radio team, there's a few of us here, and some of the Lug Radio listeners consider that KDE's kind of potentially losing its direction a little bit. Obviously, I mean, I don't really want to talk about this too much. What do you think about this?
Losing its direction, that implies that there is an overall direction to begin with, obviously.
Right, yeah.
Which I don't think that, I mean, that's like saying Microsoft Windows has lost direction if you examine their entire breadth of applications. Within the core of KDE, the actual lib space, the desktop itself, I think that over the KDE 2 period, there was a lot of kind of, let's explore, let's see what we can do with code, let's, you know, throw it around and see what happens. As the code and that makes up the, what is, you know, the quintessential KDE has grown more complex and we've got more contributors, over the last couple of releases, it has become very apparent that, yeah, we do need to have a bit more, you know, communal direction, as it were, to make sure that we're actually going somewhere that's cumulatively meaningful.
But it's
and I think that you actually see that in the last several releases where things have become more coherent, they've become more performant, things are tying together better across the code base. So while I could see how someone would get that impression from the later two KDE 2 releases, I think that that's a trend that's really been reversed and is going the other way.
I mean, Aaron, when I was involved with the KDE project, there was quite a lot of discussion back then about usability and about some of the problems with particular parts of usability, which is part of the reason why I got involved setting up the KDE usability study. I mean, do you think it's really a recent thing? I mean, because it seems to me that it's been going on for quite some time, that people have been bickering about KDE usability and the general community has been rather unwilling to make it happen.
Well, if we speak about usability in specific, I mean, there's a lot of, when we talk about consistency, there's a lot of different angles to it, and usability is definitely one of them, and probably the most user-visible one.
Sure.
You're right that, I mean, this discussion started a couple of years ago, and you're one of the people that was there right when that discussion did start.
Yeah, okay. So,
but, I mean, it's not something that happens overnight. I mean, it's a traditional, anyone who's worked in professional software development has worked with developers who come out with amazingly grotesque interfaces. It's kind of a programmer thing. It's like, well, you know, these people write amazing code, but, you know, they're not all artists.
Okay, so just leaving that aside for a moment.
Yep.
Looking forward to maybe KDE4 or something like that. Do you think there's maybe you might start from scratch with KDE4, or maybe do you think somebody might fork it and do like KDE Lite or something like that?
From scratch or fork it for which purpose?
Whichever.
No, it's going to be an evolution. I mean, we've got.
You're going to keep building on the code base.
Yes, and no. I mean, there's a lot of great technology that has enabled us to get this far, and I think we'd be somewhat silly to say, well, let's start from ground zero after we've spent years and years and years, you know, perfecting some of the technologies that we use. There are other things that obviously have shown their age, and there are some things we look at and go, you know what? We've learned a lot by using these things over the last couple of years. We've watched as our user base has matured, grown and changed over the last several years. That, okay, maybe this isn't appropriate anymore. So you're going to see some things that are going to be brand new. You're going to see some technologies that are swapped out. Our multimedia engine, for instance, is one of those items.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a natural evolution of a lot of the core pieces as well.
Excellent. Right. So something that has happened from my perception over the last couple of years is if you looked at Linux distributions a couple of years ago, they pretty much all shipped with KDE as the default desktop. SUSE did it, Mandrake did it, Knoppix released with KDE and so on. Red Hat was basically a holdout, installing, running with GNOME as the default desktop.
There were a few others, but yeah, Red Hat was probably the only big one.
Yeah, recently, most of the stuff we've seen, I mean, if you look at, for instance, the Novell Linux desktop, Sun's JDS, Ubuntu,
Fedora.
Fedora still, they're now running with GNOME. So there seems to have been, at least from my perspective, a shift there from people using KDE as the default desktop to GNOME.
What we do see is a growth in the number of GNOME-centric desktops. That's great. I think the more that we can offer the market. A rising tide floats all boats. However, if you look at that same time period, things like Windows that's come out, look at the computers that are being sold via Walmart. They're all KDE boxes running Windows. So I don't think that it's so much a slipping of, say, the quote-unquote KDE market share of the distributions, as much as there's a greater exploration as to the possibilities within the Linux and the free desktop environment.
So you're not seeing...
And with Ubuntu, we now have Kubuntu that's coming along.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Jeff Waugh talked about that last week, the show.
Yeah.
But so you're not seeing that particularly as KDE slipping in its dominance, more as GNOME rising to become an equal challenger.
Sharing, some would say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have numbers.
Absolutely not.
You know, they're equal or they're ones above the other or whatever, but I do think that what we're seeing is the direct outplay of the desktop market growing. I don't think it's so much a GNOME versus KDE thing as it is the free software desktop versus the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And that's really changing how it's being shipped, addressed, packaged, and accepted in the market.
That's interesting.
From your viewpoint, and perhaps if you can tell us what you picked up within the KDE community.
Sure.
Does it even matter if KDE's dominant or not dominant? I mean, is that ever a concern, market share or anything like that? Or is it more just about serving the existing KDE users and people who happen to come along?
There's no one definition for a KDE developer, first off. There are a lot of people that do it because they love doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
As a whole... as a general project, we said, well, let's just kind of, smear it out and average it out. There's not a push for world domination to the exclusion of everyone else. But at the same time, yes, we do take success. We do take, we value growing the user base. We value being able to service people in the corporate and the government environments, people who need things like accessibility. Those are things, core values that we go, that's very important to us. And so we try and service those. And I do think that is also something that has changed in reflection of the market realities, where the free software desktop is now being taken a lot more seriously. And that's created some cultural shifts.
Right. Okay. Can I, something I'd like to ask you about, Aaron, is something regarding free desktop. We've seen a number of interesting technologies developed recently, such as HAL and DBus, and these kind of things going on. And there seems to be a relatively slow adoption by KDE to make use of these technologies. Even things such as, obviously we've seen things such as Beagle, and I think Scott Wheeler's doing some interesting stuff with KDE for a similar kind of purpose. But there seems to be, the KDE project are a little less... forthcoming in taking these technologies up, which is something that I've seen as a cultural shift. Because I don't want to hark on like an old kind of old timer, but back when I was in,
I know what you're saying. Number one, KDE doesn't have nearly the need that some of the other projects have for these technologies. What does KDE need DBus for when we have DCOP?
Isn't it about interoperability, though, Aaron?
Of course. There's obviously benefits. There are things that you can do with DBus you can't do with DCOP. But
sure.
DBus is a relatively new piece of software. So we look at it and go, okay, are we going to swap out DCOP during the 3 cycle, or are we going to do it during the KDE 4 cycle?
Right.
Which makes sense for our users, which is respect for our user base. It makes sense for us as a project because we get more opportunity to use it. More opportunity to help it mature to the point where we can drop it in for, say, DCOP and actually make it work well on day one.
Right.
So that's one thing that does influence it, is just our need as a project for these kinds of technologies. Now, something like HAL, 3.4 ships with support for HAL.
Right.
Which, of course, implies DBus as well, because that was something that we did need. It was a hole in our service offerings, so we picked it up.
Sure.
You're right that we are a bit more conservative at picking up some of the newer technologies than other projects. But overall, I think if you look at what's available in freedesktop.org, the drag-and-drop standards, the menus, the whatnot, we actually do keep pace with those things and are involved in the formulation of them. So we do move at a different pace. I mean, not every project's going to move at the same pace with every single technology. but it is a priority, and it is getting there.
Okay. All right. And here's one for you.
You know, freedesktop.org really isn't the best place always to have new technologies, ooh, you know, arrive and invent. Sometimes it's better to use it as a place to document, you know, best practices and things that do work.
Okay. Where is the best place for new technologies to arrive? I mean, the whole point of freedesktop.org was at least partially to be a melting pot where the projects could come together and invent these new things.
Exactly. A melting pot. That doesn't imply that it's going to be the place where all future R&D happens. In fact, I would say that it's not always the best place for certain types of R&D. Something that we've been playing around with in the KDE project is a thing called Hot New Stuff, which is really starting to take legs now. And it's a distributed mechanism for people to share updates and grab updates that is single, you know, point and click. You don't have to deal with the file system. Where does KDE keep its wallpapers? You don't care anymore. You click the Git wallpapers. It shows you the newest wallpapers on KDE. Look, you grab it and go. What's nice about it is that we've proven it works. We now have it integrated with GPG. It's secure. We can do uploads and downloads.
Loving the GPG.
And it's starting to appear in more and more applications.
Just out of curiosity,
though. Now we've got that working, now we can say, hey, you know what? This really works, and we can take that to freedesktop.org as a spec.
Right.
Which is probably going to happen, by the way, because it does work really well. And then it can move from there. But I mean, if we had sat across, you know, the proverbial table, virtual table at freedesktop.org and said, you know what we really need? We need a way to be able to do distributed, secure, you know, updates. I don't know if we would have had the same flexibility and latitude to experiment and prove that it works. So
designed by committee doesn't work very well.
Sometimes it's exactly the place to do this. But at other times, I think R&D is better served in smaller cultures.
Okay, I've got one for you then. What's
sure.
What's the single coolest thing going on at KDE at the minute?
The single coolest thing?
Yeah.
Like myself? Oh. I'm kidding.
Single coolest thing is Aaron Sager.
Nice response.
Exactly. The single coolest thing, oh my goodness. For me, I mean, you ask anybody, it's going to be something different. Down the line, the stuff you talked about Scott's working on, the K-Link, that is pretty revolutionary. It's not just searching; it's a whole new level of semantic web meets desktop, really.
Right.
What's cool right now, I think, is that we're seeing applications like Contact come up, where they're sewing together multiple applications, both on the desktop as well as the server. It supports, I believe, 5 or 6 different groupware servers right now. Not to mention it interoperates with Copete, which is the KDE Instant Messaging program, Conversation, a really great IRC program. And then you look at other applications like Amarok, which are using these same technologies to deliver a seamless media experience for the user that just is mind-blowingly feature-rich and simple to use. So for me, the most exciting thing is watching applications, you know, take what we've been spending the last couple of years doing and go, okay, let's rev it up. And let's see what we can do with it. We're seeing some really cool applications here.
Very quickly, Aaron, because we are running out of time. Could you just recently you spoke about Hoola and the projects that are going on in KDE that are, in your opinion, better. Can you just very quickly tell us what's going on in the KDE world that does the job of Hoola and why we should be interested in that?
Well, in the KDE project itself, we've got Contact, which really tries to work with as many different groupware servers as possible. When we're looking at groupware servers itself, which we don't have one in the KDE project because we're obviously a desktop project,
yeah.
I do see a number of projects that predate Hoola's open sourcing that are, for me, much more compelling when I'm looking at an exchange replacement. These include Open Groupware, Colab, provide an entire suite of functionality that you can actually say, okay, we can compete. You know, we can see these products competing as they mature with Exchange. Netmail cum Hoola, which is may end up being a really cool, you know, web interface to calendars and have a really neat little, you know, I'm going to meet up with my friends at the mall thing.
Yeah.
That's great. But I think, within the open source community, we do need to be honest with how we market things.
Right.
Because it'll come back and bite us in the end. And I would also like to see, you know, when people do something really great engineering-wise, like the Open Group or Colab people, that they get the, you know, recognition for it. At the same time,
I have
to say the people who brought out Hoola did an amazingly great job. I take my hat off to them for how they've opened the gates in marketing for it. Great job.
Right.
I love their logo. I think they've got a real good background.
Well,
you know.
Aaron, thanks very much for coming on the show. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap
thank you.
It's great to speak to you. I've known you for a few years, and I think you've done a fantastic job in defending KDE and talking about the project fairly. So
can we catch up
with
you another
time? That was great to be on the show, and who knows, maybe we'll do it again.
Yeah, we hope so.
Yeah,
and
excellent.
We'll hopefully have a 5-minute update from you in a few episodes' time, just giving us a quick update on what's going on at that time. So
beautiful.
Thanks very much, Aaron.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Aaron Sago.
KDE guy in defending KDE.
I tell you
superbly
what,
shocker.
We've given KDE some shit over the
years. We have.
And I have to say, he made some really good points there.
He was a fantastic guy to interview.
A very good point about Hula as well.
Yeah, Hula! I thought he was very credible. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we threw at him, I think he exposed as being partially prejudiced.
Lug Radio? Surely
not that we're prejudiced against, you know, anything that isn't a bunch of...
Thing is, though, I think, much as I don't agree with a lot of what he says, because we've talked about this a lot in the past.
Yes.
We as in you and him, or...?
Me and him.
Right, okay.
I'd write something, he'd send me an email saying how he's full of shit, basically. But, you know, he's...
I like him more and more, you know.
Thanks. He presents himself really well, and I think he was honest about things. He didn't say, oh, KDE's really good, the community's perfect, you're all full of shit. He said, you know, the community's not perfect. There are some problems that we need to face, but we're trying to attack them, and that seems a fair and honest approach.
I was interested in what he had to say about Colab, particularly because I asked the question.
that would be why he asked.
Because I was reading.
Little bears live in trees in Australia.
That's koala bears.
Oh, right.
We'll ask
Colab bear.
The Ubuntu man about that another time. But
Ubuntu.
I was asking that question because I read on his blog that basically he was saying, you know, Colab. I think it was Colab he was talking about. Is really a more developed a bit of software than Hula, and it does a lot of good stuff. But the trouble is,
it's incredibly difficult to set up.
The trouble is, let's wait for it. It's not marketed properly.
Oh god! So, you know, he's
a man after my heart.
I would, to some extent, agree with you there. I mean, there does seem to be a lot of KDE stuff. Colab being a case in point, where everyone went, "Oh, Hula, it could be the open source exchange replacement." And you can see all the Colab guys going, "We did this 2 fucking years ago. You know, why aren't you all going to Colab? It's so brilliant." And the
answer
is,
Matt, I hate you.
The answer is, I think,
because these days I start looking at things, I think. And I start thinking about marketing, and I think, oh God, I hate that Revell.
I think a lot of reason why people didn't go, oh, Colab, it's the open source exchange replacement, is because it's part of KDE.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the impression I get from some of the KDE stuff is they think, it's part of the KDE project,
in that
it interoperates really well with other stuff from the KDE project.
Right, right.
Which is something that worries me a little bit, in that KDE stuff tends to interoperate well with other KDE stuff, and not very well at all with stuff that isn't KDE stuff.
Does not GNOME stuff tend to interoperate well with
GNOME? I think GNOME have started to do that recently, and I think it's a bad move. To a large extent now, if you want to do cool stuff with GNOME, pretty much got to use Evolution as your mail client, or you miss out on a lot of GNOME.
And I think Evolution is a mail client.
No,
I do use it, but I'm not sure what I'd miss out on if I didn't. Because I can easily install Thunderbird and I'd be happy.
I certainly wouldn't miss out on that.
You've got things like, the little calendar in the top right-hand corner. When you pop that up, it puts your Evolution events in it, for example. But it doesn't pick up on any events.
I didn't even know that.
The calendar other than Evolution. Game interoperates with the Evolution data server.
Yeah.
So that it knows that if you speak to one of your game contacts, they're the same person as someone you sent emails to in Evolution.
I knew that neither.
And Beagle takes advantage of these interrelationships. But you've only got those interrelationships if you're using Evolution.
What was he talking about there that was like the equivalent of Beagle in KDE?
That's a guy called Scott Wheeler's doing some work on a similar kind of desktop search thing.
Right.
And apparently it's streaks ahead of everything that's been
done.
I've not really looked into it myself. There was a talk at Fostum about it, but unfortunately we missed out on it.
Can anyone explain why I should care about desktop search? Don't answer yet, because I've been looking at this sort of stuff before, and I always think, I've got a couple of folders, and I put that there, and I put that there. That's good enough for me. Why do I care about desktop search?
I see your argument. I mean, if you've got a proper filing system, and you're methodical about how you file things, and I agree in one way.
It just feels like it's the new buzz of now, and in a couple of years, I'm thinking,
when you've seen that kind of functionality, and you've experienced it,
it's amazingly
useful.
So on Windows, there's a system called Blinks, which is bollocks.
It is spectacularly overhyped as well. Let's not forget that.
It is at the moment.
It's useful. It's going to be. There's no doubt about that, but it is really overhyped. because it's very innovative in the open source world.
It is, right. It is the buzzword of the moment, but I think it's like when microwaves came out. You know, they started saying, look, you want to buy a microwave, and people went, well, why the hell do I care about being able to cook TV dinners? I've got a saucepan. And then people started using them. I think if you start using it, you rapidly become really dependent on it.
Same way as what's going to happen.
Quicksilver on Mac OS X, as an example, is something that lets you start up your programs really, really quickly. By just typing the first few letters, and it picks up programs from anywhere, applications from anywhere, and
just remind me what we're talking about
documents
Mac OS
from anywhere.
Again? By the way, apparently it's Mac OS X.
the Emendio people have done a similar thing for GNOME, and everyone I speak to who's got a Mac and uses Quicksilver says they basically can't live without it now.
So
and
you
I think
speak to people who've got Macs.
Yeah, shut up, let's not have this debate again.
But the thing is, though, I think the desktop search is a lot like that. Once you've started using it, it becomes something that you depend on to find everything.
I'll give it a go then, but at the moment I just can't see why I'd want to do that. But
I'd probably wait for the technology to develop a bit further.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it'll be interesting, just sort of wrapping up a little bit. Obviously, a lot of that interview was focused around usability, something which we've spoken a lot about.
I don't know, but what?
Well, we've talked about usability and issues with KD. Fucking bastard. but the thing is, recently there seems to have been a lot of talk about changes in usability and how the community and KD seem to be sort of evolving around it and sort of trying to bring in some new blood and trying to sort of change. But I've not really seen anything change yet. And it's kind of like, I'm a little skeptical whether it's going to happen because, it's a group dynamic and changing things in groups takes a lot of time. It's difficult.
Hey, what?
A group dynamic?
Yeah.
What a load of bollocks.
No, if you want to change something in a group.
Explain what group dynamic means.
A group dynamic.
That sounds like marketing bullshit to me.
No, it's not. It's social science bullshit. But I mean, it is true.
An entirely different flavour of bullshit.
Excuse me for not having gone to university.
Groups do develop cultures and things like that, and it does happen, and people get stuck in
the
way.
In the fridge, yeah.
And you end up with groupthink, where people just all end up thinking the same thing, and they don't dare quite change the status quo.
Well, that's the thing.
That's why I thought AIDS question was interesting, because I can see someone doing to KDE what Firefox did to the Mozilla project.
Yeah,
someone setting up a not KDE Lite, because that sounds like there's less functionality, but KDE accelerated, but they turn off half the bollocks.
Yeah,
and then it becomes this cool stripped down lean mean fighting.
I think it could be Zandros or Linspire or somewhere like that.
If KDE was modular enough to do that, which it kind of is and it kind of isn't, if they could do that, I think it would be more popular than KDE itself.
I think we probably will see a fork.
The problem with KDE is that I think the developers think that everybody's using all of the features in KDE. Well, some developers, obviously not all. Mm. But I think most users love the interface. They prefer, in many ways, prefer it to GNOME. But there's just loads of bullshit in there.
I really think they need to start from scratch. Sorry, we're talking together, aren't we?
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go first.
I was just making the throwaway comment that anything that hasn't got a spatial thingy is good to me, but there
you go. Marvellous.
Been using it for a long time now, and I still don't like the fucker.
So I was talking to Ark earlier, and I was saying, really, what I think they need to do, I think they probably will fork, but what I think they need to do is just start from scratch, write it again from the ground up, and you totally disagreed with that, didn't you?
So do not think that.
Well, why would you want to rewrite KDE when you could just sit down and rewrite a new desktop?
That's like saying, let's rewrite
Take
Linux,
what
you've learned.
Well, or let's rebuild a tree when you could just create a new plant altogether that's better.
No, because things get flabby and there's
no,
a lot
I see
of
what you're saying, but why
there.
Would you write KDE again? Why wouldn't you just write something
KDE
entirely
four,
different?
Why wouldn't you learn? Thinking.
The thing is, though, that makes the assumption that the people who are rewriting the software are the people who wrote the original software and
which
have learned from their experience,
all.
Which isn't the case, because a lot of the old KDE developers, I think, there's not many old KDE developers knocking around anymore. Most of them are new blood who have come on.
Well, you've left.
And so again, modifying other people's code is difficult.
So, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but thanks again to the the big AS.
Say go thanks.
Yes. Not ass, Aaron Sager.
Thank you very much,
thanks,
Aaron Sager.
Cheers a lot, thanks.
Log radio. Log radio letters.
Nice.
Log radio letters. Keep sending them in.
John Dodson,
thank
thanks.
You.
A great deal.
That was very good.
No, that was Stephen Hawking.
Thanks, Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking's on guest vocals.
In the Lugwell Studio, it's The Hawkman.
John Dutton featuring The Hawkman.
So, thank you very much, John Dutton. Sent that in to us. Yeah. We've been saying we needed a jingle. And yep. Now we've got one.
Created on open source software.
Okay, would anyone like to create us a jingle?
Yes.
Yeah, let's have a different jingle every week. Yeah, Lug Radio Letters.
It would be great. Thanks very much, John
Dodson.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Dodson.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So, other letters then.
Yeah, you're going to read some letters now.
Right, yeah, I'll kick off. Britsel Vittel says, was the site developed with Ruby on Rails?
No.
No, it wasn't. Thank you very much. Next letter.
Craig Jennings says, hello, Lug Radio.
Hello.
I've so much fun listening to Lug Radio since I discovered it last week. And I've decided I'd like to come to Lug Radio Live.
Hey. Hey, nice.
Accent change. I'll be coming from Berkeley, Northern California. Bloody hell, it's coming from Northern California.
Northern California. That's.
I'll buy him a drink.
Yeah, I think we should.
Free entry, mate.
Hang on a second, just before you continue, right? We've got someone coming from America, we've got Cano coming from France, and we might have
a gang of Norwegians coming.
A gang of Norwegians coming.
Some guys coming from Nottingham.
And the Scots coming now.
It's Bernardo, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
Bruno, yep.
We're fantastic. We're the enormously international event. We should get funding off the European Council or something.
We should, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then we'll patent it.
We'll patent it.
Lug Radio Live, copyright us.
I've got one. Here we go, I've got one. Andrew Smith.
Yeah, go for it.
Hey. He says,
hello.
So he starts off.
Hey, Andrew.
Hey yourself. So he says, your show sucks, but since your opinions are so much like mine, I guess I suck too.
Thanks very much for that. We salute you for sucking.
However, he is from Canada.
Keep sending them in.
We salute you for sucking. I don't think that should be our motto.
I'll salute anyone for sucking.
Matt, did you want to finish your...
No, you'll suck anyone for saluting.
Oh, you're only halfway through.
Anyway, basically, Craig Jennings from Northern California.
Can I get a rewind?
I'm going to Costa Rica surfing, Paris and Florence sightseeing, and Wolverhampton laughing and drinking with all of you.
Picking up the last one.
Yep.
Oh, right.
So, where's he going? He's going to Costa Rica.
Going to Costa Rica. He's going to Paris. Yeah. And he's going to Florenci.
That's fantastic places. And where else?
And Wolverhampton.
As I said to him.
Of his trip, is it?
He's going to three European cities. Paris, Wolverhampton and Florence, right? So, unfortunately, two of them are shit. No, one of them's anyway. I was making a joke about
that joke died on its arse.
They're all bollocks apart from Wolverhampton.
That's it, yeah.
He's going to enjoy it. You're going to be very welcome, whatever you... What's his name?
Yeah, looking forward to seeing
Craig Jennings. Craig.
Thank you very much, Craig. You'll be there.
Okay. Yes, excellent. We'll be there.
I've got one.
Go for it.
Right, let me have a look. Hang on. This is from Stuart George.
He's always emailing us.
He is.
Time to get lost.
Well, he's... got lots of time.
He's an Australian living in Middlesbrough.
He says, nice work, guys. Good to hear an Australian accent again. Go the Aussies.
Yeah, go.
Go.
Go back on the fucking...
There isn't enough Aussies in Middlesbrough in the north of England.
Middlesbrough.
Middlesbrough.
As the Americans say. I know it's Australian before you say.
He says, trying to... it's quite a long email, so I'll keep it short.
Summarise it.
No, it's not. I've actually got three emails on this piece of paper.
You've done a lot of prep for this, haven't you?
Yeah, well, ACT did it. Trying to continually sell Python comes off like a gypsy's mule with a bung leg at the Grand National.
I'm really? Starting to like him again.
Ruby is the way forward. Oh. Yeah, that's right.
Are I was you starting to like him then.
You and all three other Ruby users.
It's Japanese.
Is Japanese subversiveness into Python's I want to be like 50-year-old COBOL with restrictive white space usage. I thought the episode was great, but so many people in the studio kind of detracts, as there is a whole nother level of talking over the top of everyone else. We're trying to keep that down.
Let's all talk over each other.
But we're trying to get that down.
Plus,
what the fuck's a bung leg?
I thought you said a bong leg.
I've got one. Dan.
Smoke the bong leg.
Dan from the Linux Link Tech Show writes to us.
Dan, wish you well.
Hi, Dan.
Says, congratulations on your first year. I hope there will be many more.
That's not how he talks. We all know that Dan says,
hey, this is the Linux Link Tech Show.
Is that how Dan talks?
It is.
Anyway, Dan.
Link is a bit more, hey, guys, it's Link here from the Linux Link Tech Show.
Is Link, Link's the guy who sounds like, have you watched Sex in the City?
No.
Yes. He sounds like...
Girls watch Sex in the City.
Yeah.
Me and Jono do too.
We do. We cuddle up, don't we, man?
It's lovely.
Sounds like a guy in Sex and the City.
Sex on the City.
Sex on the City. Watching Sex in the City.
Anyway.
Anyone else got another one? I've got another.
No, you had. He sounds like someone. Who?
Who?
Who does he sound like?
He sounds like, I can't remember his name. He sounds like,
a bloke.
You know the annoying short-haired ginger one. Ah, large man.
Okay. Oh yeah, I know who you mean. The marries the one who's also ginger.
Yeah, her boyfriend.
All right. Next male.
Who has a bollock off. That's not a tennis player.
It is. He's foreign television.
That's Anna Kournikova.
Anna Kournikova. Right. Email from Owen Stenton. Have you seen this list of mono apps? No.
Yes.
Same range. he goes on to say, apparently there's more than just Beagle, and then he gives the URL at OSNews or something, but he says, you know what the really great thing about .NET is? It allows a bunch of MS.NET programmers who have no idea how to program properly to claim they can do Linux.
They can do Linux.
Great show again. Thanks very much, Owen.
Thank you, Owen.
We still haven't seen the list of mono apps. Nor will we. Thank you very much anyway.
We're going to put that URL in the show notes, though, aren't we?
No.
Yeah, because we always do that, don't we?
We always say we're
going
to.
To be fair, you have started putting some links in.
Yeah, but they're not the links we mentioned in the show. They're just links that I think of when I'm bothering to do the show
Pull your ginger
notes.
Finger out.
Alex Converse. With me. Alex Converse says we should use the Vorbis Tools 1.1 encoder. Yep, when it's on Ubuntu, I will do, mate.
No, not you as well, Matt.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
Stephen O'Grady, love the show, guys. You remind me of my London-based colleague, James Governor.
Hi, James.
Hello, Governor. He's the Governor.
And we also have
like a whole new level of vendor lock-in, you Ubuntu types.
We also have York Gantry.
No, it's Gantry York, I think.
There's a Gantry written to us.
Says, I love the show. My only wish is that it could be a weekly show. Is there any chance that you can move it to a weekly schedule?
Yeah,
Once again,
we can't be this funny every week. We've said this more than once.
I'm already in trouble for being here tonight.
Yeah. He is genuinely in trouble.
He is actually in trouble.
Why don't you say how you love your wife? And
I do love my wife very much. Lynn, I love you. Not that you're going to listen to this. No. But, you know,
even when she's got one on her.
Wait till I edit this.
Got one what?
Got one on her. It's a term. It's a British term.
It's a term.
It's like on the foot.
Yeah. So, guys, is that the end of the letters?
That's the end of the thing. Thank you very much, people. Let's check these on the way. Thank you.
Keep sending them.
And send your jingles.
Keep sending them.
Hang Lab Radio.
Keep sending them in. Show. You're useless.
Show at lugradio.org.
Yep, send them in. We'll read them.
Right. We've got important business to attend to.
What would that important business be, John?
It's Lug Radio Live 2005.
In the Midlands?
It is. Let's give it a... It is the 25th.
Why are you randomly coughing?
It is the 25th of June, 2005. It's a Saturday.
That's the Van Saint-Juan in French.
That's very interesting.
Bentley think of Juno.
Another pointless fact.
You always have to have some kind of foreign quote, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
So, anyway, Lug Radio Live.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Anyone confirmed yet?
A little more exciting.
Yeah.
Colin Watson.
We've got Colin Watson from Ubuntu who's going to come and talk from Canonical who's going to come and talk
Linus
about.
Linus Torvalds has come in.
Shut up.
No, he isn't. No, sorry.
So we've got Colin Watson coming.
Colin?
From Canonical to talk about Ubuntu.
He's a big installer bloke for.
Why is Colin Powell called Colin?
Because he's a nutter.
Okay. American.
Simon Willison is coming down.
Simon Willison is coming down.
Big web bloke.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. It'll be lovely.
He's got a big web.
Yes, webbed feet. We've also, incidentally...
Apparently, this is the year of Simon Willison and Stuart Langridge, someone wrote on the website.
They certainly did.
Really?
What a pile of shit. Not the Simon Willison bit, but...
What, you get married or something?
Yeah. It was Jeremy Keith wrote it.
Nice one, Keith.
Who's he?
He's a web guy.
My mate at work turned around and says, apparently this is year of your mate Stuart Langridge. I was like, oh, really?
Well, the year loses his cherry.
Yeah.
To Willison.
Sadly, no.
So anyway, who have we got? We've got Willison, we've got Watson.
Willison and Watson. We've also got some various other people coming to do some lightning talks.
Can we confirm anyone else?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, well, if Mark Shuttleworth is in the UK, or if he can get to the UK, he's going to come and talk as well.
Woo!
Just remind me, what where's he from again?
He's from Canonical.
Ah.
This is
and
a
space.
And Seathifica.
Seathifica.
Right. My wife's South African.
What Linux product have they bought out?
You might have heard it's called Ubuntu.
It's called Baz. It's a thing for sharing code between different projects.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Short for bizarre.
Anyway, bollocks. Anyway,
it's true.
All right, whatever.
They usually were developing Ubuntu, but that's not the point.
He said, I mailed him to see if he'd come and talk, and he said he'd love to come and talk at Lug Radio Live.
He's too busy drinking it in a jungle.
But he said he can't commit to being in the country so far in advance because he's got to be all over the place, hot footing around.
off the foot.
Off the foot, yeah.
Doing off the foot things with Ubuntu.
Right, cool.
So if he's going to be available, that we'll know close to the time, and fingers crossed he's going to come down and talk about how he's been in space and everything.
Yeah. And we've asked a bunch of other people, and we've got people saying that they may come, they might not do, so we're just kind of confirming at the moment with various people.
Yes, and we've got the Lug Radio gaming people are creating a gaming network. And yeah, that's
all about monitors, though, God.
Yep.
So. Listen, I can transport monitors, mate. My car's huge. Yep.
So basically, we're going to have like a...
Don't worry about the monitors.
A Wolfenstein Enemy Territory gaming LAN on there.
Yeah. We've also got...
LAN on the LAN.
We've also got the little mini expo. We've got Mambo confirmed.
We've got Uncle Bolds there.
Scundog. And we're probably going to have an info point booth.
Can I just ask this? Why have we got Scunthorpe and Doncaster Lug doing a stand?
What's this show called?
Lug Radio. Yeah, I know, but like I said, you're from Doncaster, and you're from Scunthorpe.
Well, we thought it might be interesting.
Ah, it'd be great, I'm sure.
So
Lug Radio pub quiz, grand final.
Yes.
Recording of a Lug Radio...
keep pushing. Allegedly.
We've got three teams now. Tech Show.
Scundog.
Scundog. And who are the others?
Wolf's Lug.
And us.
When Nero and his crew going to do it?
No, they absolutely said no.
Nero. We're depending on it.
They're too busy drinking meths.
Anyway, so it's going to be great. We're still, obviously, I mean, we've only really been planning this for about two weeks. So we've done reasonably well in 2 weeks. We're on to some big names. So keep tuned. It's going to be a great day. And fingers crossed it'll be free if we can get some funding. But if not, it's going to be a couple of quid. So.
Yeah, so send your emails to show@lugradio.org to say you're coming. If you want to send a paper suggestion, do the same, show@lugradio.org.
Yeah, if you're interested in doing a lightning talk or even doing a main talk.
That's important, yeah. Send your paper suggestions.
Yeah.
We want people to come and talk about anything.
Or if you want to discuss an idea, come on forums.lugradio.org or go on #lugradio on Freenode.
Yep, we've got a special little forum for the Lug Radio Live.
Alright, nice.
So, great. We'll wrap it up then, shall we?
Thanks a lot, guys. It's been a great show.
And we'll speak to you soon.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
See ya, bye.